Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 3 recap here on Reality TV for Half-Ups. Whew. Oh, boy. We've got an episode, and specifically an outcome to talk through. First, let me usher in our panel as per usual. Liana, how are you doing?
I handled my emotions in a very sane, calm way by throwing out all the whiteout that exists in my home. I live in a whiteout free house now. That's very important to me.
Good. No mistakes being made in the Boris household as a result. And someone who never makes mistakes, Brent Wolgamott. Brent, how are you?
Doing great. Ready to talk about RuPaul's Drag Race. Lots of tea to spill, Mike.
I mean, all the tea in China, essentially, because this is, I mean, we need to start, obviously, with the result of how things happen. We've talked about the face crack of the century. We've talked about the face crack of the millennium. I would argue this is like the face crack of the epoch or the era or whatever the hell you want to call it. Like
all time and space.
Yeah. I mean, the space-time continuum. This might be one of the, and let me just say at the top, I don't know about the two of you. I was not spoiled for this outcome whatsoever. This might be one of the most shocking things that I've seen on reality TV in quite some time. It came, I mean, well, it's when you watch it back, you sort of see the breadcrumbs a bit, but this came completely out of left field. I'm stunned and I'm a little at a loss for words, though I'm sure that has not stopped me before and they will certainly come out of my mouth as we sort of parse through this. Let's start by just talking about the outcome itself. Brent, what did you think when this happened on your screen? What were your initial thoughts?
I was like, God damn it, it's true, because I had heard that she quit and I didn't know how and I didn't know why. But I had heard that De La quit, and it was during, and I do very good to stay away from spoilers, but there was a recap of a show that I watched after we recapped our show, because I like to hear what other people are saying, and it was Matty Rance, and he was talking to Jabbar, and they said, well, I hope that rumor that she quits isn't true. And I'm like, oh, Miss Thang, like, really? Like you're going to drop that on me like that? Like, and I, you know, and then he tried to backpedal a little bit, but, and I love him and I love his recaps, but I was a little bit like pissed because I was like, well, so, you know, is she going to quit? And if so, what are the circumstances? So when this episode started, I was like, shit, she's going to quit. And how is it going to happen? I don't know how it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I could see it all coming. It was like a slow motion crash where you could see it coming. You know what the result's going to be, but you don't know how you're going to get there. Now, it didn't get there how I thought we were going to get there, but we still got there. And that's a bit of a bummer because obviously De La totally could have taken this home. But I think then, you know, once you start saying that, then you have to ask yourself, well, what does that mean? You know, i.e. winning Drag Race. What does that mean to De La? If she didn't want to win the show in the first place, why did she come on? And, you know, she saw RuPaul's Drag Race season 2. She saw that they eliminated each other. And now all of a sudden, even though she's been playing the game for half a season, she doesn't want to play it anymore. She's a little butthurt about it. I mean, I got things to say. So, you know, Liana, go ahead and then I can go in again.
Well, yeah. So this was not a slow moving train as far as I was concerned. I was just smacked just like Becky from Big Brother 17. I was just hit by this train and was, yeah, expect that little sound effect every time, a single time I talk.
Because, no, I believe the train goes. I know we have a lot of stuff to get through, but I'm so excited to get to that because I have so many thoughts. I'm as many thoughts as Brent has about Vanilla Cram. I have so many thoughts about just BB's verse of Drag Up Your Life, but go on.
Yeah, that's my new ringtone. Okay, so yeah, so I did not see it coming. Upon rewatching the episode, yeah, you can totally see the signs. Like, when you know the outcome, there are these little, I mean, not even little sometimes. It feels like there are these
big
glaring things. That,
signs.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But because I was just in my happy little train-free bubble, I had no, and then once it happened, I was following it, and apparently Liana's constantly confused about reality television mode. I was just like, can she do that? Did she quit or is she, it took me a really long time to process the fact that she quit the show. De La quit All-Stars 3.
Yes, let's be clear about that. I hear people in the comments saying that she's the real winner. I hear Dela saying that I'm the winner. This is Rob Cisternino's biggest pet peeve when people who are off the show declare themselves the winner. Like, I'm sorry, bitch, but that's not your place. The producer, RuPaul, okay, they declare who the winner is. You don't get to do that. I'm a little pissed at her right now. I'm a little PO'd. Some people in the comments who are Dela fans saying that, you know what, she didn't win RuPaul's Drag Race. She beat RuPaul's Drag Race. Well, I guess you can say that. If you think that this is going to somehow better her career, I am sort of annoyed with her. And at one point during this season, and I've been talking to some fans of hers on Facebook Messenger, you know, they were like, well, I was surprised that you weren't a Dela fan, and I'm glad to see now you are. Well, now I'm back off the train, okay? Off the train. I'm not a fan anymore because I don't understand this. Mike, I just want to ask you, like, where is this coming from? Is it because of Morgan going in on her? Because she seemed to get over that. And then she even brought Morgan back, for God's sake. I don't understand the point of this, because let me say this. If the eliminated queens had not been brought back, okay, let's just say that it's the top five. We're going to play it like normal. We're going to get a top two. We're going to get a winner in a lip sync, and you have to eliminate somebody. At that point, would Dela have quit? It seemed like she was more butthurt about the fact that she was taking somebody else's dream away in favor of somebody else who was, by the way, on the losing team. Can we just talk about that too? Well, I guess we can get to that. The fact that this team won and yet they had to eliminate somebody, the other team lost and got to bring somebody back. So Rue, what the hell are you doing?
Well, so speaking towards what Dela was going through, and again, I do not want to put myself in her head. I think that she makes whatever decisions that she wants to. I think Michelle, though, put it really nicely in What You Pack In, where I think she said that she said to Dela afterwards, like, I don't understand your decision and I don't need to. And so it's tough to sort of pick apart the psychology. What I'd like to assume is that I think it was a perfect storm of factors. I do think what you're saying, Brent, is true, that, you know, I think it was getting to a point in the competition where she felt like there wasn't really any chaff left in the wheat field, and she felt like, okay, these girls are all so competitive, I have to send one of them home. You don't have someone like Chi Chi, unfortunately, who's sort of like that one straggler that you're like, okay, I can get rid of you anytime.
Yes, you do. That's the thing I can reject. I mean, Mike, the obvious person to send home was Kennedy Davenport, and I love Miss Davenport. Mm-hmm. Okay, I love her to death, but she had the worst track record by far. She was not in the top two for the challenge. Dela wasn't particularly close to her. I will say this about Kennedy. The best thing that Kennedy did was not throw herself on the mercy of the court. Instead, Kennedy was not, she wasn't like Chi-Chi. Kennedy was like, I want to be here. This is everything to me. I need to be here. Like, I can't, I have to be in the top. Please don't send me home. I really do feel like that whatever Kennedy said to Dela was the one thing that caused Dela to eliminate herself, because obviously, because she's not going to eliminate Trixie. Yeah. She's not going to eliminate Shangela. It's either Kennedy or she's going to pull the plug on herself, and she chose to pull it on herself. Obviously, kudos for Kennedy for whatever she did. I don't know if she was playing the game or whatever, but I'm really pissed at Dela. This is the thing. When people say that, you can tell I'm really wound up about this. The thing that people say, well, she beat Drag Race, she didn't win Drag Race. Well, I guess you can say that if you're one of these people that believes that Clay Aiken won American Idol over Ruben Studdard, even though he wasn't actually the winner, he had a better career. Okay, fine, granted. But was that the point of coming on RuPaul's Drag Race at the beginning? It may be the result, but I don't think it was the point. The point of coming on was to try to win RuPaul's Drag Race and have a good time. I think she's a hypocrite, because she had no problem eliminating these other people along the way. And now all of a sudden, when it gets to the top five and these other bitches are coming back, she's like, well, I want to just eliminate myself and declare myself the winner. And, you know, she's like Emperor Palpatine on Star Wars, where she's like, I declare myself the winner for all time. And you guys can go have your little fun with your little drag. And I'm just going to run off into the sunset. Like, girl, bye, whatever.
That was the biggest thing for me, was the fact that she kept saying stuff like that. You know, like, I'm the real winner. And then to see people on social media defend her choice, I was like, she quit. How on earth is she? She's literally, okay, let's assume it's the top five. There's, you know, because now some person goes home and somebody comes back. There is literally one more challenge and then the final four challenge before you are going to win. Like, how are you a winner? This is you, like, if she was like doing really crappy in the challenges and was like a Chi Chi Devane, for example, or a Roxy Andrews, and was like, guys, I'm just going to quit. You know, like I've had a great time. I'm, you know, that then that's sort of the survivor. Like I'm a real winner, you know, because I made such great connections. But she was doing well. What?
Yeah, I do think that something else. I know that you said, Brent, that like the did the eliminated queens have something to do with it? I do wonder if for Dayla, and again, this is me getting a lot in her head, but is was it sort of like an out of sight, out of mind thing of like, yeah, I sent Morgan home, but like, I don't need to necessarily think about that right now. I need to focus on the competition. And having that literally stare her back in the face and tell her how much it hurt her to do that. I mean, Dayla says it many times over the course of this episode and her actions prove it. She's very non-confrontational. And I feel like when you confront a non-confrontational person, they have a habit of sort of like shrinking back into their shell and not really responding to anybody. And I kind of feel like Dayla did that. She kind of took a defense tactic and said, you know what? It's clear that the action through what I do here are hurting people. Let me then take the chance to step out. Now, I completely agree. I've been a Dayla fan coming to the show in every episode, and I was pretty damn pissed about what happened. You know, I to quote someone who Shangela, you know, name dropped in her Andy Warhol diaries last week. We were all rooting for you. You were doing such a good job, Leon. I think you make a great point that it was two episodes before the finale. You know, you could just, you know, if you end up winning one more, it's okay. Like, just send another person home and then you're there. But this attitude that we saw this episode, we've got a lot of the hashtag, you know, first world drag race problems the past few episodes of Dayla clearly having problems with sending people home. This might be the first episode where Dayla was very adamant about how I don't necessarily have the same, not necessarily competitive drive, but I don't have the same end goal as these other queens. I don't know, Brent, can you think of any other time where she's really said that before this episode?
No, and I think it's a crock of shit. I don't understand where she's coming from. I mean, this is where I have to ask the question, is the All-Stars, is the game broken? Because, you know, now you have somebody who, rather than eliminate one of her friends, she's going to eliminate herself. And it seemed like all the girls were really close, and they didn't want to eliminate each other. I don't know. I really feel like that it has to do with more with the fact that she somehow is proud of the fact that she's Miss Congeniality. By the way, Thorgy Thor. Okay, everything that Thorgy said, I was living for in this episode. Mm-hmm. Everything that Thorgy did to piss me off during episode two, yeah. She totally won me back during this episode. When Thorgy at the end was like, well, Ben has declared herself the winner, and it's sort of like the queen in England waving, you know, where, you know, hi, everybody, you know, how are you doing? Like, I mean, that's, I was totally with her. Like, that was exactly how I felt at the time. I just think that Ben thinks so highly of herself. You know, you said that Milk is narcissistic. I think Ben is narcissistic. Ben thinks like, you know what? My shit doesn't stink and I do drag and I don't get involved in all the cattiness. Well, you know what, bitch, you do. I'm sorry. You're in the world of drag and you're in the cattiness because cattiness invariably is part of drag. You are part of it. It looked you back in the face. You didn't like what you saw and you decided to quit. Girl, bye.
Well, and it's so funny because Kennedy Davenport, of all people who I feel like, you know, oh, you know, Kennedy Davenport, like always in the drama, she's straight up front. She's honest about everything. And I feel like that's less catty somehow than Ben de la Creme.
Less kitty. Yeah.
Less kitty.
Well, here, so I have a few questions about this elimination, and I have some from me and I have some from the listeners and people on Twitter in response to this episode. First, what do we think the show thought about this elimination? Because I'm of two minds here. The first is Dayla did a viewing party in Seattle and she answered some questions afterwards, and apparently she told this story where you know, our theories were correct that when the queens make their choice for the lipsticks, they need to show it to a director beforehand just to know. And Dayla was really nervous about making this move, and when she showed it to the director, apparently the director just sort of made an explosion noise and motioned with his hands as if to signify like, this is going to be amazing TV. And don't get me wrong, despite my connotations and my thoughts towards the actual action itself, I thought it made for some incredible television. Just between the reactions, you know, the sound bites, the action and the way that things proceeded, I thought it was genuinely gripping, no matter what you think of it. So there's that one side. But on the other side, like just like you were saying before, Brett, you get these confessionals from Thorgy, and especially from Aja, who calls her Ben de la Christ. And I can't tell, Liana, if that means that the show is sort of crapping on her and her reasoning on the way out.
I mean, I have to imagine that's the case, right? I mean, it just has to be. And honestly, my favorite part. So, I mean, I don't think RuPaul knew, but for me, the looks of Carson and Michelle on either side looking up to like the Queen RuPaul just being like, what the fuck do we do? It was like that part was really beautiful. So when we talk about good TV, that was some really great fucking TV.
Yeah, Mike, do you think that RuPaul knew?
I think RuPaul knew. Look at RuPaul's, oh my God, are you sure? Like, Ru can do some good acting, but I, especially rewatching it, like, I could kind of tell that I think, and again, if this director told Ru what was happening and she had to sort of play it up a bit, if you go in there with that context, I kind of think it was a little, you know, it was she knew about it beforehand. But that being said, it still did not take away from the overall just fantastic spontaneity with the other queens and the judges.
Yeah, Ben De La said that she had a Sharpie and whiteout. So she went up there, grabbed the pink lipstick. Then for the black lipstick, she Sharpied out whoever's name it was. And then she used some whiteout really quickly to write her name in. But she then had to show it to a director. And she was like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this really fast. Because I think she was asked, you know, did you get any pushback from any directors, producers? And she's like, no, I just showed it to one of the directors. And they were like, you know, made the explosion noise. And I just knew going into it that it had to be really quick. Otherwise, I might second guess myself. I'm like, it might have been good to second guess herself.
My favorite part was because when she did that show, she said that she picked Kennedy's lipstick in case she couldn't eliminate herself. And I was like, so then Kennedy should have gone home. Like, what?
Yeah. This brings up the next question. If Bebe had won the lip sync, do you think Dayla would speak up and say, before Bebe makes a decision, I'm going to send myself home? Or do you think she remains mum and just sort of continues on without giving the opportunity to do so?
I don't know.
I think she probably grabs the moment for herself because that's the kind of queen she is. She's like, you know what? I'm going to make this moment about me. I'm sorry. This left a really bad taste in my mouth. I don't know. And I hear the people out there who are fans of Dayla and they're like, well, she just showed that she is the Miss Congeniality of her season. And she showed that she's better than the show. And I'm like, I guess that's not why I watch. I watch because there's a big prize at the end and I want to see the queens really go for it and try to put out their best drag. I don't want to see someone bigger than RuPaul. And for a moment, I thought that Dayla decided she was going to be bigger than RuPaul. And I thought it didn't sit well with me.
Yeah. So I have it's funny because I've heard the defense of Ben De La Creme of like, oh, she took it into her own hands. But my casual friend who just started watching RuPaul's Drag Race, he messaged me after this episode and was like, everything that Dayla did that made me love her, I hate her. Like, it's all gone.
I know, right?
So that was like sort of the visceral reaction of somebody who, you know, like isn't so entrenched in their fandom. Like, that's how they felt after this whole
debacle. Well, I don't know if she's going to care, Mike, or maybe this wasn't her intent, but this is sort of like, you know, politicians nowadays where she's not going to make the masses happy. She has a base of fans. She wants to those fans to be her fans and have a great base of support. She doesn't give a shit about anybody else. And so as long as those people are saying, yes, Ben, we love you, I don't think she cares anymore.
I agree. I think that speaks honestly to the stuff that she was saying throughout this episode of, you know, her kind of implying that, oh, I entered this not necessarily, you know, wanting the competitive aspect of it and the elimination aspect of it. I know that she talked with Michelle in What's Your Packin' about the fact that when she first got a call for All Stars 3, she actually turned it down because she's like, I'm happy with where I am in my career. So if she's trying to go for this redemption thing or trying to appeal to a wider audience, it does seem like she's not necessarily going for that like some of the other queens before them.
I don't know, Liana. I can on one hand, I can see it. I it's so funny. It's like we had sex and now we just totally shot our wad and now we're like, yeah, we can. we're in the afterglow with cigarettes right now.
That's right. I just want to cuddle. You know, it's so funny because I guess I just don't understand the reasoning behind the decision. And that for me is what's hard, because sometimes there are people who I disagree with their decision, but at least if I can understand where they're coming from. And so that for me was the biggest thing of like, okay, was it the fact that the eliminated queens were coming back? Is it the fact that she, you know, the comment that Ross made about we expect 120% or whatever from you. And if it's just 100, it's meh. You know, like if all of that was getting to her, was it building? Was there some premeditated nonsense behind all of this? Like, I don't know what the situation was and it doesn't really make sense to me. So it's hard for me to wrap my head around it all.
So let me ask a question from Jill Robinson. Sort of going back to what you were saying before, Brian. Jill asked, do you think this will now blow up the whole lip sync for your legacy twist? I feel like Dela kind of threw back the idea of eliminating queens back in Rue's face. Couldn't handle the repercussions of eliminating someone and possibly hurting their fans. So going back to what you were saying before, Brent, do you feel like when moments like these happen, it gives the producers pause to think maybe making the queens eliminate each other is not necessarily a good thing?
Yes, I think that's definitely a possibility. The one thing that I think is a fly in the ointment as far as looking at that theory as possible is I don't think that Kennedy Davenport has a mountain of fans. I think Trixie does, and I think Shangela does. And BB obviously was in the top, so she couldn't eliminate her. But I do think that Kennedy was there for her to eliminate if she wanted to. Now, I can understand it if you don't want to eliminate Trixie, you don't want to eliminate Shangela because you're Miss Congeniality. That's what you're known for. You don't get into the drama, and you don't then want to piss off Trixie's fans. I mean, that's a big deal. Can we just talk about this really quick? Like the All-Stars format, Rue, I love you, but honey, like sometimes we talked about this before the podcast. I won't talk about what we were talking about, but sometimes Rue just sticks to her guns when she doesn't need to. And she really needs to reevaluate this because it's gotten to a point in social media where so many of these queens have a following. And in eliminating a queen, you're then going to piss off all of their fans. And it just doesn't work anymore. I don't really think it worked during All-Stars 2. It worked a little bit better this time because there wasn't a big click of queens from all one season. But I do think that, you know, who's going to eliminate Trixie and receive the blowback of all of the Katya and Trixie fans? Who the hell is going to do that? No one's going to do that if you want a viable career outside of Drag Race. And I don't know, maybe that's why Rue put in the policy to begin with. I don't know.
I don't know. This whole thing is just a hot mess.
Well, here's another question that I want to ask about. We talked before about sort of the end result of the season. So I got a message from Savannah Campbell who asked, does the winner of the season have an asterisk next to their name now?
No. I already knew what this question was, Liana. Take it. Please take it.
She quit.
Well, here's how I'll temper this question a bit. Will All-Stars 3 be remembered as the Ben de la Creme season now? Is this an eclipse moment?
No, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mike, but the question is just so ridiculous. It's not. She's a quitter. She's going to be sixth place. We're going to go to the end of the season. We're going to crown somebody. They're going to win $100,000. They're going to be in the Drag Race Hall of Fame. They're going to get the new handmade skit at the end of All-Stars season 4 or whatever the hell they're going to do next season. And Dela is just going to be a fleeting thought. Look, right now, and look, in the here and now, we're talking about her. But 48 hours from now, I won't even really remember her because I'm sort of annoyed at her right now. And she can just be up there in Seattle with her fans doing her thing. And she's a quitter. So no, the winner of the season, I've heard this. I knew this question was going to come even before you said, I have another question from so-and-so and so-and-so. I'm like, I know what this question is.
Brent, okay. Put on your Jamaican accent. You're Miss Cleo-ing it right now.
I know, right? Like I know what this question is because I've seen this so many times. This is bullshit. You know what? Whoever wins $100,000 is going to deserve it. And, you know, Dela quit. So, girl, bye. I don't want to hear from you no more.
She quit. She freaking quit. I'm sorry. Like, that's the thing. When we remember the season, is this going to be a Dela season? If anything, for me, it's going to be this season that she quit. And I'm not going to think about it favorably necessarily. Right. Like, I think I totally fall in the Brent camp right now. I'm just annoyed. And I think part of that I'm annoyed is because she was doing well. Yeah, yes. Like, we were rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. And it's just really frustrating because, okay, look, sometimes when if something's not working out, I totally get it. You're allowed to quit things. You don't have to keep doing stuff. But when you enter into a competition and then you're doing well and then you quit and then to say that you're the real winner of the season, like all of it just really irks me. And so that's why when I think, oh, does the winner going to have an asterisk? Well, no, because she did what she did to herself and no asterisks needed.
That was the thing that I was pissed off about Liana the most when she kept saying that she's the winner. You know, all she needed to do was say, well, you guys, I'm happy. I'm fine. Don't feel bad for me. But when she's decided to like crown herself, like detox where she's like, crown it, you know, I'm like, no, you don't get to do that. You're not RuPaul. You're not the judge. You don't get to decide. You're the winner. Mike, I'm sorry. I'm repeating myself, but I'm so annoyed at that.
Okay. So maybe that is the thing. If she had said, I'm so sorry. Like, I can't do this. This is terrible. Like, if she was came up, like the reason for her quitting, she gave her real reasons almost, or, you know, like, I guess I just, I'm really confused still why she left. If she had said, I am cracking under the pressure. I can't take it. I know I've done well, but like, I am in a mental state right now where I can't handle this. I would have respected that so much more. And I wouldn't have this bad taste in my mouth.
But Mike, instead, she was like, I'm going to say that this competition doesn't mean as much to me as it does to the other girls. Yeah. So in doing so, she's acting like she's bigger than them.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's beneath me to try to like get into the shenanigans of winning the show. So I'm going to leave this for you guys, but I'm the real winner of things. That's how it came off to me. I'm sorry.
Well, I think Thorgy called it like omnipotent, right? It did feel very, very much like I am no longer part of this game. I will now leave you, which I think is very different than from someone like Adore Delano, who is just like, this is really mentally exhausting. And I thought it was really great. I don't know if this is purposeful, but really great timing to have Adore Delano on the pit stop with Alaska this week. Because I feel like there was some really great conversation in there about the similarities between sort of the feelings that they were having. But I do agree about the mixed messages, because look, I can completely understand. I mean, I'm not going to sort of, you know, shade her thoughts that she's having, because they're her thoughts, and God knows we've all had our troubles with, you know, that little voice in your head saying like, this is not you, you need to do away with this. But I do agree that when she's talking in confessionals about how, you know, this title doesn't really mean as much to me as it does to other people, I'm having trouble with this, and then she goes out, she reveals her lipstick, and she gives this speech about like, don't take this as a sign of disrespect, you know, I want to come back and show myself what I can do. That doesn't feel like it's the same thing necessarily. And so it comes off a bit sketchier.
Ugh, it's just, yeah, it's like, okay, I'm the parent now. I don't have time to play with the children. Like, I'm going to let you guys fight it out now. I'm going to go. It really did everything from her like theoretical reasoning to the speech that she gave to sort of how she treated it. And that's why I think back to that question that was asked, whatever, a while ago, but about how, you know, those confessionals from Aja and Thorgy, you know, was that like them throwing shade at Dayla? And I feel like it really was. And I feel like those confessionals also helped for me sort of set the tone of how I was supposed to feel about this situation. And it's not great.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we'll put a bobby pin in this, and I'm sure we'll touch upon more Dayla as we talk through the rest of the episode, because we have an hour and a half episode to talk through. So we start off here. We get a little bit more of this Handmaid's thing. Turns out, you know, we were speculating who were the three queens, even though we really weren't speculating. And oh, it turns out that Milk and Thorgy just sort of run in at the last minute. Brent, what do you think the reasoning was behind that? Do you think it was to sort of have people's interest stoked as to gossiping as to who those three would be and that it's not all five of them?
Yeah, I think Rue was trying to make it into something that it wasn't when she was like, well, how many were you able to capture? By the way, this whole moment, I mean, they were building it up so much all season. Leon, I don't know how you felt about it, but it totally fell flat for me.
I thought it was so dumb.
Okay, so you're going to do exactly like what you did in season two. So you're going to eliminate somebody who's in the competition, and you're going to bring somebody back who's not in the competition. That's what you're doing.
Like, maybe this is the literary nerd in me, but I was like waiting for more tie-in to The Handmaid's Tale.
It's done now. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing we got was like, you know, I am Morgan of Ben de la Creme or whatever. Yeah. So I guess I don't watch The Handmaid's Tale, so I don't really know what that's about. But yeah, apparently that was some sort of tie-in. Like, they were from the house of Dayla because she was eliminated by her.
I believe it's the handmaids that like the whichever master they're serving.
Yeah.
It's of, and then his name is their last name. So like the main character's name, Offred of Fred.
So I would be like Brent of Taryn Armstrong. That would be it.
Yeah, pretty much. You can shorten it a little bit. Of robot, maybe, just to like generalize
things. All right, yeah, okay. More. Definitely a possibility.
So we go back to the workroom. It turns out that Trixie would have eliminated Aja as well. And, you know, we have the queen sort of talk through, it's kind of like a what's next type of moment where everyone's sort of looking around at each other and saying like, okay, who would we eliminate? You know, Kennedy gives this confessional, or it's not confessional, but she speaks out towards the fact that she has the lowest track record, as we talked about before. But I think she says, what, Liana, the victor doesn't go to the fastest or the strongest, it goes to the person who actually finishes the race.
Oh my God, I know. See, like watching it back is like, okay, because she stayed, like she didn't quit. Oh my gosh. Yeah, well, I mean, it was, you know, but to my naive eye, the first time I watched it, it was, okay, you know, now we're really getting down to the wire. You know, and who's going to be eliminated? It's like comparing apples to oranges. Well, first of all, you can compare fruit. Like, I know that that's a saying, but you can still compare apples and oranges. All right, they're both fruit. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, again, my naive eye was like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, let me say really quickly, can we talk about Miss Kennedy? Because I love Miss Kennedy. Oh my God. But it's so funny to me because they're talking about, like, you know, the whatever, how are they going to eliminate the queens now? Because they have an idea and they're like, well, who has the worst track record here? And basically it's Kennedy Davenport. And even though that's what she said at the beginning of the season, Miss Kennedy Davenport, she was like, I think, because y'all remember the first episode, Kennedy was like, I think you need to look at the whole thing, the whole how they've been doing. Now, all of a sudden, Kennedy's like, well, it's how they're doing on that day. That's what I think you need to look at. I love it that she just says it with a straight face and doesn't, she like, nobody even gives her a side eye. They're like, okay, all right, girl. Yeah, she just slipped that in. Nobody even noticed.
I love that. Kennedy next time is going to be like, I think we should not eliminate the one who has the longest hair out of drag. I think that's the easiest place of whoever has the biggest eyes.
I'm trying to think of a contestant in the history of reality TV who, like, it's not about winning for Kennedy. It's about getting to the end. I don't care what happens. She's going to get to the end. She's going to get herself to the end. I don't care. She's like, I need to get to the end. So, I mean, I give it up to her. Like, I think that she lacks in some places, but I think she excels in many, many others. I am a huge fan of Kennedy Davenport, and I would love, God, I would just love to crown her as the winner. That would be so great. Oh my God.
To be fair, she only has one more episode to go through before she gets to the finale. So it's a pretty easy goal in sight at this point, even though, as we talked about, she came very close to losing out on that goal.
I don't know. I think she just doesn't want to end up in fourth place again. Like, so if she makes the finale, she doesn't want to end up in the Roxy Andrews spot of, you know, girl bye. She wants to end up in the, you're one of the best, you've got a shot to win, and I'm seriously thinking about it. That's a win for Kennedy Davenport, I think.
I think it's fun. Well, it's funny with Kennedy because also, you know, there are some people who are like really playing the game. I think Kennedy would not remember the fact that she said that at the beginning of the season. Like, she just does what's in her best interest at that time.
Right.
Oh, I love it. All right, let's get to the next day here. As Rue introduces the next challenge, they're going to be forming a super group called the Kitty Girls. So they will be writing lyrics and performing their own Spice Girls-esque song. But there's a twist. They will be competing against the five eliminated queens. Before we get into everything that happens after this challenge, Liana, what did you think about this idea at the outset of having them compete in teams against each other?
It's a crock of shit, or whatever Kennedy said.
Yeah, it's not fair and it's not right.
I mean, I don't know. It feels like such a gimmicky thing that I don't really care about. Like, especially when it was the deliberation about who was going to win at the end. And I don't know. The whole thing fell a little flat for me. I thought that, you know, the fact that it was like the whole group also was competing against each other. So maybe I just didn't quite understand what was happening. But I just think somebody who's eliminated, like Morgan, who then ends up coming back, who's eliminated first, has an option to come back. I don't know. That always just doesn't necessarily sit right with me. So, but I don't know, competition or whatever. So,
yeah. Ugh. Brent, we got a question from Zach Sinclair about how maybe the rules weren't explained properly. At least I didn't necessarily get it. If the eliminated queens had won, what was going to happen? Would they critique everybody, determine a bottom of the current queens, and then two of the best queens and the eliminated queens lip sync and choose someone to go home? I was a little unsure as to if the eliminated queens had won, if their super group had won, how things would have proceeded from there.
My understanding is that if the eliminated queens had won, then they would have had a lip sync. Whoever was the winner of the lip sync would have had the choice to eliminate anybody from the losing team, and they automatically would have come back into the competition. That's how I think it should have gone if they were the winners, which they obviously weren't because they were freaking terrible.
we'll talk about that. But yeah, I guess because I and that makes sense because I, you know, the eliminated girls were like dismissed summarily when they were told they wouldn't win. So I guess they would do the same to the current queens and not necessarily determine a bottom there. The next half hour I would say, of this hour and a half episode, I would call a mid-season reunion for RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 3, because it was essentially all the queens standing around the table talking to one another about what happened over the course of the season. Some built bridges, some burned bridges, some burnt bridges, then rebuilt bridges. Liana, what did you think overall about this omnibus of conflicts that came out into the open?
Well, it's funny because I have like different headers for things that happen. So it's like after the elimination, next day in the workroom. And this one was just titled drama session because it started and then it was like, OK, we don't talk about everybody because it started with Morgan's comment about, you know, and Trixie was like, oh, I'm thankful that I didn't have to eliminate anybody. And Morgan was like, oh, so you're going to coast through,
right.
Which I loved. but yeah. Oh, my God. I don't even know. I mean, it just it did feel like very much an airing of the grievances. And I don't know if this is, you know, part of the reason why Bende La Creme like really got into her head about being attacked. It was kind of nice to see everything air back up. I will say Milk versus Kennedy, with Milk's like mouth half open crying with like her tongue out, just made me laugh. So I love that element of it all.
Go ahead.
But yeah, well, I think in general it was just, you know, it was a lot of like drama, a lot of airing of the grievances, but it didn't really felt like it ever came to anything apart from, you know, the Dayla stuff at the end.
Yeah, it was like drama for drama's sake. Yeah. The thing that I was just aghast by was the fact that they had all this, you know, bitch session for 10 minutes and then they go to commercial and they're still talking about it when they come back. Like, we've got more people to get through, more grievances to air. We have things to talk about, tea to spill, drama to get through, people. And we just wanted to make sure we gave everybody their time. Like, even Aja with Bibi, which didn't even seem like a big deal to me, but Aja had some things to say, like, well, you really should have said that I helped you out on that outfit. And of course, I agree with Bibi. Like, would it have really mattered? No. You would have still been in the bottom. I'd have still eliminated you. Girl, bye. So I think most of this was just bullshit. I was glad to see that Thorgy was able to come to some sort of peace. Although it's weird, though, because that was taped, you know, what, a year ago or, you know, 6 months ago. And she eventually found peace with Shangela as far as eliminating her. Or was it Kennedy? I'm sorry, Kennedy eliminated her.
I mean, you're probably confused because Shangela also like got herself involved in every single conflict that happened at around the table.
Right. Yeah. Game of Thrones reference. Right. Exactly. So the point the point being that Thorgy got some peace, it seemed like. But then in the interviews after that have been done recently, she still sounds really bitter about everything that happened. So I don't know. I'm sort of not sure. I was glad to see on the show, like I said, most of what Thorgy said, I was definitely living for. And the other thing that I thought was interesting was with Ben and Morgan. Ben should have just like owned her shit for a second. We've talked about this all the time on Big Brother, but the thing that irritates people more than anything is when you don't own your shit. And by that, I mean, all Ben had to say was, it was my right to eliminate somebody. You said you were going to eliminate the strongest people. I feel like I'm one of the strongest people. I decided to eliminate you. Now, of course, my normal criteria for eliminating somebody is to eliminate the weakest competitor, and maybe you weren't. I thought it was a little bit fake news that Dayla was trying to say with a straight face that Morgan really was the weakest between her and Chi-Chi during the first episode. She's like, well, even if that hadn't happened, I still would eliminate you. I'm like, no, no one's buying that, Dayla. Like, just own your, this is what I mean. Own your shit and say what you mean. So if Dayla would have just said, and I know she's not confrontational. My partner's not confrontational in real life. I understand how people like that work, but he's still able to own his shit. So all Dayla needed to say was, you know what? It was my right to eliminate somebody. I felt like that you were the biggest threat to me personally. And even though that was outside the bounds of what I normally would use for a criteria to eliminate somebody, I decided to use it and I did it. And I own that. Girl, bye. That's all she had to say.
Three things. First of all, when Dayla was talking to Morgan that Morgan was the worst, that shot of Chi-Chi just had me howling in laughter because Chi-Chi was like rolling her eyes and like, bitch, you know that's not true.
Chi-Chi was basically like a spectator this episode. She didn't need to participate in the drama because she said like, it's totally okay that you sent me home. And like, I feel like she's just like, I'm just having a good time because I know I'm definitely not coming back. So I'm going to enjoy the hell out of this.
And at the end, when it's like, you know, let the music play, Chi-Chi's like the one in the middle dancing and everybody else is like crying and hugging and she's just like falling out. Okay, but yes. The other thing, to go back to the point about, this is the thing about Dayla saying that, oh, I don't do drama. If you just own your shit, like Brent, like you were saying, I feel like that's less drama than whatever sort of cagey nonsense you're trying to do now. So that, I go back to that point. And then the only thing I really wanted to know, which I did not get out of this segment, is whether or not they told Milk that Marc Jacobs showed up right after Milk got eliminated.
The shot was actually taken out of context of Milk crying with tears running down her face. It was after they told her that. So there's a lot of things about this. First, Liana, I love that you said airing of the grievances, because this is a Drag Race Festivus. It really is. I mean, there's so many things in here. First,
I'm like, maybe you're going to bring this up too, but are you going to bring up the fact that Milk was like, I can't believe that I was that big of an asshole?
Yes.
Did you all think that I was that big of an asshole? And everybody is like, yeah, me. Yeah. Raise your hand.
I think my favorite was Milk and confessional being, am I an asshole? And just leaves every home household in America to say, yes, you were.
Yes.
So good. But going back to Thorgy and Shangela, I love it. It sucks for Trixie, but I loved Thorgy going after Shangela. Shangela just deflecting the bullet by saying, well, there was this note that got aired that had you shit talking me, because, oh man. And I mean, to quote Trixie, like, this shit again, they just Notegate comes back once more in full force. And mainly because Thorgy's like, why did you do that? What was the context behind this? Why am I involved in all this drama?
Yeah, I like that Trixie tried to shut it down, Liana. She was like, you know what? I already talked about this 1,000 times. I don't want to talk about it no more. And Thorgy was like, no, we're going to talk about it.
Oh, so good. Yeah. And then Kennedy was like, I just would have read that letter, put it in my drawer. I was like, okay, Kennedy, thanks, bitch.
Feeding the drama.
Yeah. No, Kennedy was so bitchy during this part. Like when Morgan confronts Ben about, like, you know, Ben says, oh, we came to a consensus to keep the stronger performers. Kennedy says, no, we all did it. And it's like, you're not making things better for anybody by saying this stuff, Kennedy. and then when Milk says, like, I just don't understand why I went home. And Kennedy went, well, I have a list of reasons why you went home. And she goes like, bam, 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 bam. Like, oh, that was, I did feel bad for Milk at that part, because you can genuinely tell that, like, she honestly had no idea the way that she was coming off across. And to have someone just come at you and say, like, these are all the reasons why I sent you home, that you had no idea why, you know, how you were behaving. And by the way, everyone else feels the same way. That's got to be a little tough to deal with.
Well, and coming from Kennedy, of all people, who, like, has no sense of trying to get a soft landing, like, Kennedy's just going to say what Kennedy thinks.
Did we make anything, Brent, of the, like, making up between Shangela and Thorgy? Again, you talked about, like, the long-term repercussions and how that might not necessarily have happened after the show, but do you think that sort of might have helped other queens reconcile later on in the episode?
Maybe a little bit. You know, I think, like, in thinking about it a little further, I think that Thorgy, in her recent interviews, has been more mad at the show and the fact that somebody got, you know, some people got better props, and the fact that she ended up in the bottom two. So I don't really think that Thorgy is mad at Shangela. She doesn't think she deserved to be eliminated, but again, she doesn't think she deserved to be in the bottom two for that episode. So, you know, it's just different people, different strokes. I think Thorgy realizes that it really wasn't Shangela who did her dirty. And I think Thorgy also realizes that there's no effing way that Shangela is going to eliminate Kennedy Davenport when they're best friends for 10 years. You know, it's just not going to happen. I thought Shangela did herself a little bit of a disservice by trying to say that there were other reasons. She should have just said, you know what, bitch, this is my girl. I can't eliminate her. I'm sorry that you were in the bottom two with her, and I just had to send you home. That's the tea, you know?
Yeah, Thorgy gave her an opportunity to do so, because, you know, Shangela was just explaining her reasons, and Thorgy says, oh, and also because you had a deal with her. And she's like, no, I did not. It's like, kind of, who are you kidding? I totally agree. Like, take it. And I do agree that, you know, with Thorgy's statement, I think she ends their entire confrontation with her basically saying, like, listen, it's not Shangela's fault that I was in the bottom two. So essentially, like you said, she's sort of has it more against the show than she does with Shangela. But we'll put a bobby pin in that drama as well, because it's time to rehearse with the one and only Adam Lambert. Liana, how did you feel about Adam sort of serving as the music stand-in for this episode?
Yeah, I thought he did fine. He didn't necessarily stand out to me as really good or really bad. So I guess that's a good thing, maybe. The only thing is that there was that random, those random other people and the dude who was pointing, who had a really terrible haircut. I kept staring at him the whole time. So maybe, I don't know. I just don't have a really strong opinion on Adam Lambert one way or another. So I thought he did fine.
Well, I, on the other hand, have a really strong opinion of Adam Lambert. I thought he was very fun, and he got along really well with the Queens. Like, I remember, like, Lucian and some other people, like, they're really dry and they're just sort of matter of fact about the work. But Adam was sort of living for them and what they were serving. And he was like, yes, 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 like laughing with them. Like, I was so, like, that's exactly how I would be if I was in the room with them, you know, and I'm just in there giving it to me and I'm trying to help them, but I'm also appreciating the moment for what it is and how delicious it is. And I thought he did a great job. I like, I don't know what it is. I'm sure I'm going to get some Yas Queens from the listeners, but Adam Lambert is the first guy and still the only guy that I can really think of who wears makeup, but yet I would still bang the living hell out of. Like, he's just so freaking hot, Liana.
He and looks good.
Oh,
he looks
so good.
That reminds me of that one random episode where it wasn't Carson wearing eyeliner at one point, and I remember being like, "Oh my god, not, you poor thing. Who did your eyeliner?" Yeah, no, it's so different. It looks like it works. It so works for him. I really don't get it, but somehow, like,
somehow
he pulls it off.
He still looks butch as fuck when he's.
I know,
that,
right?
God.
It's bizarre.
I'm a huge fan of Adam Lambert as well. To your point that you made earlier, Brent, about American Idol, I do feel like he was a true winner of American Idol season 8, because considering
that's
what he
true.
Did, what he did after the show. But I think what he also brings in as well is the fact that he's also an actor. So I think that when it comes to this challenge, which is about building out your own persona and bringing that voice into the song, which some queens did and some queens didn't necessarily do, I feel like Adam was really good in that acting coaching. Whereas, like, if you have someone like Lucian or maybe even Todrick in there, they might not necessarily push them in that direction. To your point, Liana, I think the two guys there were the music supervisors who worked on, like, the songs like the Divas Challenge earlier on in the season. So they were sort of like working out some of the more musicalized aspects of the song.
I just did not like that one man's haircut. It was driving me crazy. It was so bad. It was like a bowl haircut, but it was like high, like at his temples. And it was like shaved on the side. I'm sorry. I couldn't get over it.
I was, Mike, you had me going to Google to find out who Adam Lambert lost to in season 8. It was
Chris Allen,
who I have not heard from since. So, yeah, I'd say Adam's the real winner.
He had that hit song, Live Like We're Dying, and his career did not live, suffice it to say, after that song. So some highlights here from Adam working with the Queens. First, I mean, it's all pretty much from the current Queens. The eliminated Queens, there is a little bit of back and forth, you know. He says that Morgan's a little boring with Bimbo Kitty. Aja's killing it on the mic with little Banji Kitty. Milk just decides to go with Milky Kitty and talks up how she has definitely not the best but the most memorable rap from season 6. Oh no, she better don't. But when we get to the current queens, Brent, I think you tweeted the gif of Adam Lambert reacting to BB's whatever the hell was coming out of her mouth in reaction to this episode.
Yeah, he was. This is what I mean by him just really getting into it and having such a great time. Look, I think the standing queens, as opposed to the eliminated queens, they were in it to win it. All of them, I thought, did such a great job. We can get to the runway and their performances, but I really, really, really liked the interactions that some of them had with Adam. Obviously, with the exception of Trixie. I don't know what was happening there. I think Trixie is a little bit dry, a little bit sarcastic, thinks that she's funny, and I think that Trixie decided she was going to continue to try to beat the horse and be funny, and it wasn't working. It sounded like she was being a bitch to Adam Lambert.
That whole when Baby was performing and you get like Adam's face, Shanji's confectional, and like Trixie's look, just the combination of those three things made me really happy.
it was just fantastic. And you know what it reminded me of? I sent this YouTube link to you guys earlier before. Maybe I'll put it in. I'll actually edit it in. It reminds me of this Chappelle Show sketch where they parodied Making the Band when Diddy used to host it. And they did this one part of it where Dave Chappelle played a rapper named Dylon, who was actually on the show. And he got brought into the studio to do a track with Wyclef Jean. And all Dylon does when he gets into the mic, he goes,
"All right, here we go. I'm a rumpel ting, a rumpel tum, a rumpel still, a rip and a rhyme. I rhyme and I rip. This is the way that Dylan spits. You trying to get some of this hot fire?
And like, that's what I felt like when BB got on the microphone. It's like, okay, BB, let me see what you want. Okay. Oh, I'm pussy. I'm pussy. And you see Adam Lambert's face like, what is she? Did she just get a spirit in her? What the hell is going on?
Yeah. She was like speaking in tongues, Mike. Yeah. That's what it was.
We'll definitely talk more about that when we get to the stage. But yeah, we get this moment from Trixie where, like you said, Brent, Trixie has this very dry sense of humor that I really like, but I don't think it necessarily... I mean, if someone like Adam Lambert, who doesn't necessarily know who she is or hasn't interacted with her... I mean, Adam Lambert's been on the show before, but he was in the season 6 premiere. You know, he wasn't interacting with Trixie before. So when Trixie, you know, when he says, okay, sing a higher note, and Trixie says, oh, because you were enforcing gender stereotypes, like, Adam Lambert's going to take that at face value.
I actually forgot about that one. That was a little bit like...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Liana.
It was just uncomfortable. And I was like, Trixie, it's not working. It's not landing. Like, please change your tone. Like, yes, we think it's like, I think it's funny, but don't do this. Like, it's so not working. Oh, maybe uncomfortable. We need our own like little soundboard.
If she didn't cut it short during the Snatch Game with the RuPaul impression, you think she's cutting it short anytime soon with Adam Lambert?
Oh, Lord, no. Oh, disaster.
Well, the other thing we get is that Ben de la Creme decides to go for this angry punk goth kitty to channel her morose feelings towards Morgan, calling her out, but doesn't necessarily translate in the studio. You know, basically she's wavering between being more blasé, more flasé da on the microphone instead of like pissed off goth. And then when she tries to get pissed off,
love that.
I throw that word around. So that might be the one Drag Race term that I've used so many times many different situations.
You used it, I think, on a Amazing Race podcast. And like, clearly, like, Jessica and Rob like didn't know. I think Rob maybe just like chuckled or something because it was like, oh, you messed up the word.
Right, because they don't know that you're doing it in jest. They think that you're actually like Pearl and that you're an idiot. So
to be fair, I get many, many words wrong when I don't mean to in my real life. So it's really just par for the course. But it's clear that Ben is really not doing well here. Now, she's going to eventually have that corroborate into a good performance. But Liana, what's your take here on Ben's sort of mental state when she's in the studio trying to get this character across?
That's like all I'm stuck in my head now.
Say bon.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god, so bad. Okay. I thought this is Dayla feeling bad for herself. Cause when, you know, they're first going through their characters and she was like, or we could be depressed. And I was like, okay, bitch, get your head out of your butt. Let's get it together. Right. And then to have her do it, and I was like, okay, like this could be fun. This could be fine. And then like the final performance was so good. And I was just like, I don't even know what to make of her at this point. But yeah, I was a little like, okay. Like I didn't think it was gonna work, honestly, when I like saw the in the studio performance.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, I thought, you know, like I said, I had been sort of spoiled that Dayla might quit. And so when I saw her performance in the studio, I was like, okay, she's going to end up in the bottom three or the bottom two. And rather than allow them to eliminate her, she's going to like eliminate herself and ride off into the sunset and declare herself the winner. Now, that's not how it happened, but I was sort of annoyed at the show for not allowing me to see that Dayla had turned it around in the studio. They basically did a bit of a head fake. They tried to make us think that Dayla was going to fall on her face, and then she ends up winning again.
By the way, how is your head fake?
No complaints.
Wait, I just want to say Trixie's character being the nymphomathlete description, I was obsessed with that. I know the rest of like felt like a complete disaster, but the nymphomathlete resonated with me.
I do love the specificity of that. We'll definitely get to that. But I do wonder if one of the reasons why Dayla improved on her performance from the studio is this makeup moment, doing makeup quite literally the next day, where Shangela just kind of like squidges Ben and Morgan together and says like, now make up you two, and they sort of patch things over a bit. You know, Morgan does apologize for what it's worth and realizes like, oh shit, I can be really intense sometimes, which, yeah, Morgan, yeah, you really can. And some people like Ben, who's non-confrontational, might not necessarily take it as well as somebody like Tyra Sanchez did. Brent, do you feel like this was instrumental in Dayla's performance, sort of just being emotionally at peace? And how do you think this tied into Ben bringing Morgan back ultimately.
Well, I think it definitely tied into her bringing Morgan back. I think that Morgan in this moment, definitely she had a Brent moment where she was like, you know what? I definitely can be a bitch. Like, you know, and I'm really, really intense. And I maybe was with a person who wasn't that intense. It's sort of like the same thing happened with me and Taryn sometimes, because Taryn Armstrong is not a very confrontational person. And during the So You Think You Can podcast contest where I was backing Liana, I was like really, really intense for Liana. And then eventually got to a point where I was really upset with Taryn and started like, you know, yelling at him like, you have to see that she's freaking awesome, okay? And then, you know, Taryn is like, you know, he's like Ben, he just shuts down, like he just starts malfunctioning, you know what I mean? So but then like the next day I was like, yeah, I'm a little bitchy, I was a little rough on him, so yeah, I didn't mean to feel bad, but you know, that's just me, that's just how I am. So I think Borgen definitely had a moment like that where she was like, yeah, I was a complete bitch. And I think Dela, to her credit, took the apology and was like, you know what, I can see that she actually does feel bad about it, and so I feel good about it too.
Yeah, a couple of the things from this mirror talk. First, Milk does a great Alexis Michelle season 9 reference with talking about she feels like, you know, I'm Alexis Michelle yelling at everybody for why'd you send me out in this blue dress and this fur, which I had blocked off in my head for some time. Maybe it's because I don't want to defame now producer Alexis Michelle of Drag Race, but oh, that was such a fun reference. But there's this other interesting thing in the Kennedy Milk stuff where I feel like we actually got to see a bit of Kennedy's vulnerabilities. I don't know if that's the word to describe it, but Kennedy talks a bit about how, you know, when I grew up as a kid and I was constantly on the fringes of things, you know, and I was never able to get into the inner circle, I was just taught to sort of leave things alone and stop trying. And so when Milk confronts her with the, you know, I don't like your drag thing, instead of choosing to like directly confront it, she decides to just sort of incorporate that into the reasoning why she got rid of Milk. And I will say, you know, as kind of bitchy as Kennedy can be sometimes, I thought this, mm-hmm. Liana, this was a really interesting sort of way to look into why she might be behaving that way sometimes.
Well, so yeah, so those are things that I like to see when somebody gives backstory to understand like why they made a decision that they made, you know, because clearly like Milk coming after Kennedy rubbed Kennedy the wrong way. And so having this sort of story from her past gave me a sense of, oh, okay, like this is why you did wrap it into the reasons for sending her home. But to go back to the Alexis Michelle thing. So in the net or like the promo before they go to commercial, when Milk was like, you let me walk around as a douchebag, I wrote lol, like in my notes, like Milk totally Alexis Michelle deserves a producer credit. And then when she said it herself, I was like, yes.
she gets it.
Exactly. I was like, thank you. Oh, I really, really did appreciate that from Milk.
Well, let's go to the runway here. We talked a bit about Adam Lambert, but our other guest judge is Baby Spice herself, Emma Bunton, in order to judge these girl groups. Brent, any feelings towards Emma as a judge this challenge?
Again, the guest judges have just been great. I really thought that both her and Adam were in it. They appreciate the queens. They appreciate the absurdity of what's going on in front of them. Nothing phases them. They're just living for the fact that they're on this crazy, you know, Pepto-Bismol stage of RuPaul's Drag Race, and they're judging these freaking drag queens. Like, it's just a cool moment, and I'm glad that she appreciated it. She was definitely in it to have a good time.
Yeah.
What I thought was really great about both of them is the fact that, was it Carson or was it Ross? Who's the other? Yeah,
Carson
and Michelle seemed to fall into the background for me. And I loved that fact. The fact that the other two guest judges were, you know, disagreeing with their opinions and saying how they felt and giving real feedback. Like, that was just so nice. It really felt like a panel of five people, not just a panel of like Michelle bitching about the color green.
And I do wonder
I
wonder if part of that is Drag Race becoming more of a part of the zeitgeist, where more celebrities are like catching on to it, that you bring on stronger willed people than like, I love the B-52s, but like, here are the B-52s to judge a cheerleading challenge. They might not necessarily have some strong opinions about anything, but maybe it's because it was also in both of their wheelhouses, both being musicians. But I agree. I thought Emma Bunton was bubbly and absolutely fantastic. Let's get into these.
Well, just really quickly, Mike, about that. I think it definitely is a part of the fact that RuPaul's Drag Race is part of the zeitgeist, as you say, because it set a new record.
Yeah.
I think it was just a new ratings record for the franchise history in the 18 to 49 demo. It said Billboard also says the show was also the number one cable show on social media for that day with 521,000 social interactions, according to Nielsen Social. So, I mean, it was the most watched episode in the franchise's history. And that includes the Lady Gaga episode mm-hmm. from last season that was also on VH1. That is pretty cool.
Absolutely. And so these millions of people were met with, let's start with sitting on a secret. Let's start with the eliminated queens here. Do we feel the need to go queen by queen, or do y'all just want to give overall impressions of this group?
No.
Next.
Next. No, I mean, Chi-Chi's got a great voice. I thought it was very, very fun. I mean, Chi-Chi's such a great musical performer. Acting, runway, girl, bye. But when it comes to music, Chi-Chi is great. So I loved that she sang her own part. Aja was very, very interesting with the rapping. I thought Morgan's was okay, but I liked that she had a more cohesive presentation it set itself apart a little bit for me in terms of all of the other contestants. Milk, Girl Bye, Thorgy wearing the same wig that she wore during the roller skating challenge. So no, I thought that was terrible. Overall, I thought their group was definitely the weaker. They didn't have as much choreography and they deserved to be the losing team.
Yeah, it was meh. I thought that Aja did a really great job. I mean, Aja can spit. Like, I think she did really good, except it was weird because in her performance on stage, I feel like she was missing some of her own lyrics. It's like you spit too fast in the booth to like keep up with yourself. But yeah, Chi-Chi was great. She was Cajun Kitty, which was so cute, even though it didn't really have anything to do with anything
like
else.
Space suit right. Kitty.
and then she's wearing this like, the silver jumpsuit thing, which was like sort of didn't really fit like completely.
What was
like,
Morgan?
Morgan was Bimbo Kitty.
Bimbo Kitty.
Yeah. Like I thought the presentation with the using the Tati thing, which she was also in season two. I thought that was very, very clever.
Yeah. She used a lot of Tati. She cribbed a lot from Tatiana, like saying the same part. She used choices. I choose both bathrooms when I got to go pee. What I will say about, I liked the actual lyrics to Sitting on a Secret more than I did Drag Up Your Life. I thought the lyrics were more clever across the board. But I think what Drag Up Your Life had over this one is that Drag Up Your Life had such diverse and very specific characters. Whereas, to your point, like, Cajun Kitty did not look Cajun. Bimbo Kitty, okay, she stripped off a couple pieces of clothing. Little Banji Kitty was probably the closest to what her title was. Cardio Kitty, I could kind of see it with the leotard and the leg warmers. Milky Kitty, I don't know what the hell that means, so I guess she was Milky Kitty.
It was weird. It was like clear overalls.
The translucent overalls and the gap tooth. Now, that being said, Milk's, both of these songs brought it home with lyrics that made no sense, with Milk talking about, like, if you think that, and you don't. If you say that, you didn't fart, you did. Like with.
By the way, yes, thank you for bringing that up. What is with Milk in the farts? Does she have a fetish for the farts? Because during the first episode in the introduction, that's what she said when she came out. I farted. And now she's talking about it again. Like, I swear she's into that. It's creeping me out.
We've cracked the case.
I actually did like Thorgy's. I would say that Aja was probably my favorite just between. Even though she might have missed some of her own lyrics, I think that she made the biggest performance. The cartwheel wasn't the best, but I loved the death drop in the middle of it. I think she had the most attitude behind it. Jumping into the split, talking about, got a secret bigger than Alyssa's, talking about her baby hair. I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought Thorgy, again, going off with this cardio character, I thought it was good. I liked she brought in her key catchphrase by saying, lunge down low, come on, Rue, squeeze that tush, and then go, whoa!
Yeah, I thought this, like, she looks like a guy, Mike. That's the problem. The other queens look like women in cat suits, okay? And Aja moved like a woman. Thorgy, on the other hand, looks like a guy, like, just clowning around in some costume. That's the reason why I didn't like it as much.
Mm-hmm. That's why Stevie Nicks' workout video wasn't very successful.
Witch up your life with Stevie Nicks. Who do we think, if the eliminated queens had somehow won and Rue had deemed a top two, who do you think it would have been?
I think Aja would have been there.
Aja, Asha and Morgan, I would have to say.
Probably. I think it might be. I think Carson had so much fun with the farts. I would not be surprised if it was Asha and Milk.
Oh, come on.
Maybe Carson's into it, too.
No. Yeah, they meet in the same forums. Let's move on to Drag Up Your Life, which, as I talked about before, I thought was the better overall performance. I like the song more. I think it was. It helped.
Mike, I'm still singing it.
Drag Up Your Life. I like that it was more upbeat. I think that definitely helped. We're Sitting on a Secret was more of that, like, it wasn't a ballad, but it was more like downplayed. I mean, Drag Up Your Life was clearly a parody of Spice Up Your Life. And I think that the characters overall were just more, again, some were more well sketched out than others, but they all looked completely different, as opposed to the Sitting on a Secret girls kind of all looked the same, which I guess makes sense if you're forming a girl group, but if you want to go for distinct personalities, this was inherently more interesting. But let's go queen by queen here. Let's start things off here with Trixie, the IQ kitty. Liana, I know you were all for the nymphomaniac, brainiac persona, but did that play on the stage to you?
I thought it was clever. She looked so cute, too. I just couldn't get over her outfit. I don't know. And I know that, you know, she got some critiques about the wig, which I don't know. But I thought her look was really cohesive. I love the little pie symbol on her chest. I thought it was nerdy, but also really cute with the, like, overalls, but real short skirt. So I thought that Trixie did a really good job.
I co-sign the co-sign. Brent, what did you think?
I really thought that Trixie was a great kitty. I thought she did a great job. Sorry, my iTunes just randomly started there and I had to shut it down. I'm like, what did you say again? I don't know.
I heard you say like you liked the song and it just started to play a random song for you.
Oh, okay, cool. That's exactly it.
I'm Trixie
Mattel. Trixie Mattel, this is the first time that she's really, really impressed me. I loved this presentation. It was cohesive. It definitely had a point of view. It's like I'm back on Project Runway, where it's cohesive. It has a point of view. That's what I liked about it the most. I liked the lyrics. I thought they were really, really clever. I liked the outfit, Liana. I thought the wig, everything worked. I thought everything was just very, very fun. I know who this chick is and where she's going, as Heidi Klum would say.
I mean, I would hope that she did well, because this is a music performing and writing challenge, and she just put out a whole album. So you would hope that, like, she'd do at least pretty well. And even though she might have struggled interpersonally with Adam Lambert, I'm very glad that it came out well on the stage. I thought she had super clever lyrics, which arguably might have put her in the top over some other queens, in my opinion. But yeah, I completely agree. I thought she was a great way to start things off, and she had a very distinct character that I think, you know, especially when she did the little interjections during the choruses that were very nerdy as well. Let's move on to Diva Kitty. Let's move on to Kennedy. Brent, you said that Kennedy was definitively in the bottom here. Do you think she was the worst out of these group of kitties?
Boy, that's tough to say. See, I didn't think any of them deserved to be eliminated.
Okay, Ben.
They're the winning team. They're the winning team. Why do you have to eliminate somebody, Rue? They beat the other queens. So no matter what they did, they were going to... Somebody was going to have to go home and some eliminated queen was going to come back in. Is that how it's going to be, Rue? So they had there was no motivation for them to win, I guess, other than the $10,000 to the winner. I'm so annoyed by that. Like, Kennedy, I thought, was fantastic. I mean, when she came out there and did that leg kick, and let me be clear, only she can do that. Okay. This is why I get mad at queens that wear flats, because Kennedy is in 6-inch boots, 6-inch high heel boots. Okay. And she comes out there and she does a leg kick all the way up to her ear. And she does it right on the beat of the music. That takes fucking talent, people. Okay. That was really, really great. That's what I love about Kennedy Davenport. And she was serving it to me. Like, the only thing that they criticized Kennedy for was the wig, that it looked a little real estate. I mean, I loved the fact that it moved with Kennedy. It wasn't supposed to be something that was like an updo. It was supposed to be something that whipped around. So I didn't understand where Carson was coming from. Let me be clear about what I said, Mike. She was definitively in the bottom as far as the judges were concerned. I personally thought she was fantastic.
I thought, I don't know if this is, like, I'm trying to remember her lyrics now and I can't. And I think it's because I was just so fixated on her performance.
Yeah.
Like, that's her performance was, but her performance was amazing, but I don't remember the lyrics at all.
To be fair, again, I'll say that I think that overall the first group had the stronger lyrics from like a comedic perspective. Kennedy's weren't really there. The only thing that I took a note of was that she said that like drag pays and then she threw money out of her bosom. But I will also say that Kennedy and Trixie were probably the best singers out of the group. I had forgotten that Kennedy could sing, because all I could remember from season 7 was cha 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 heels. I think that's what Kennedy sings in general. But she even had that little like fun bit with melisma at the end of like. So I thought that, you know, I thought the performance made up for the fact that the lyrics weren't necessarily there. But Liana, how do you respond to the idea that she didn't necessarily personify diva, the idea of a diva kitty from the judges?
What is a diva kitty? Can someone answer me the question? But because I would have to understand that premise in order to whether or not she like fulfilled the criteria or not. I mean, she killed her performance. So if I had to define a diva kitty, it would be a bitch who can go out there and lay it down. And she laid it down.
I wonder if they were thinking of like, a Mariah Carey type of kitty. But I guess this is, in the judge's eyes, 0-2 for Kennedy trying to portray divas. So unfortunately, I think we found something that she might not be the best at.
Yeah, she just needed to have a little bit more of a thought out concept. I wish that somebody would have nudged her and said, you know, that's great, but build on that a little bit. You know, it just needs to be a little bit more thought out, a little bit more presented to the judges, a little bit more cohesive than Diva Kitty, because what is that? And, you know, if you can't describe it, then the judges aren't going to be able to see it. I think that's where she probably fell flat. Look, here's the thing. If you're forcing me, like, let's remove the eliminated queens. We're not even talking about them. These five queens, and we're going to have to rank them 1-5, and somebody has to go home. I mean, I guess it has to be Kennedy, because I thought her concept, either her or BB, honestly, I thought that their concepts were the least well thought out. But at least Kennedy was giving me some performance on the stage, whereas BB, I thought, wasn't giving me much. What are you laughing at, Liana?
I'm just thinking about.
Oh, it was Mike? BB. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm just thinking about that's like that's Choco like, Choco La La La.
That's like when I go to the drive-thru and I said, you know, and I order and then they say, would you like anything else, ma'am? Mike, you were laughing. I thought it was Liana.
If I had a nickel every time my voice was confused for a woman, I'd be able to buy something pretty nice for myself. Let's move on to one of the top kitties here. Ben's goth kitty ends up putting out, despite some reservations in the recording studio, ends up putting out a great performance, in my opinion. Liana, any thoughts about Ben's performance here as goth kitty?
Yeah, I thought it was really great. I thought it was something that was unique. You know, later to find out it was, you know, the outfit was not so unique. It was a recycled Julie Andrews look. But yeah, it was something that, you know, I didn't think was going to work based on what we saw before. But then once she got out there, the performance, the lyrics, the attitude, like for me, everything just worked. It stood out and it was different. And I really, really enjoyed her performance. Right. Like given all the stuff I said about her, but whatever.
She was able to be morose, but yet have lots of energy. And I think that was the key, because the performance in the studio was just dragging with energy. There was no energy there. It was a nothing performance. You couldn't even say that that's supposed to be a performance, and it got worse as it went on in the studio. But then when she came out and performed for everybody, it had pizzazz, it had spunk, it had energy, and yet still it came across as a cohesive vision where you could see that who she was, what kind of a kitty she was, what she was trying to say with her lyrics, and how she was feeling at the time. All of the facial expressions and the different looks that she gave to the beat of the music, again, I thought was fantastic.
I mean, and this was the funniest set of lyrics, intentionally funny set of lyrics, because it, like Liana said, it's just a funny idea to me of, okay, you have this pop girl group, and then there's this one person that just doesn't want to be there. And we'll see that Ben doesn't want to be there soon enough, but this idea that, like, I have to do this, great. Like, she interjects in the chorus as well of, like, okay, fine. And I'm glad that she took Adam's advice of, like, channeling the morose feelings into anger instead of just depression, because it really led to, like, more feisty moments. And, I mean, my eyes were consistently drawn to her. Maybe it's because her color tone was very different from everyone else, but I loved, even though it was recycled, I loved, like, the Wednesday Addams like get up and like the bread loaf hair with it. I thought it was extremely strong, extremely unique from a character perspective. I mean, she was definitively my number one, which again makes me so angry when the results eventually happen.
Yeah, and it was well defined too, right? I mean, if that's the critique of Kennedy, is that, which it's funny because we know Kennedy can make these really well defined characters from her Bitchler performance, but whatever. The fact that those two in contrast specifically, the fact that Dela had a really clear idea of who this person was, what the physical mannerisms were, the lyrics, like and the look, everything just fit together really well as one whole package.
All right, let's move on to Sparkly Kitty with Shangela. Brent, what did you think about Shangela's performance this week?
I thought it was probably a little bit mailed in. I thought it was very fun and spunky and had lots of energy. Again, something I look for in these drag queens of when they're performing in front of Rue. She was smiling the entire time. But I thought that Sparkle Kitty, again, it's sort of like up there with Diva Giddy, where I didn't really understand what it was. And I thought that so much of the performance was just Shangela being Shangela.
Yeah.
And I didn't see anything more thought out beyond that.
This reminded me of in All Stars 2 when I think it was the makeover challenge when Alaska comes out and she's in like the exact same silhouette. She like makes over her partner in like the exact same silhouette. And there's just like a flag that says, hi. It like that felt mailed in. It felt like it was like, OK, Alaska, you're just doing Alaska. This totally felt for me like I didn't think it was all that great, honestly. I mean, yeah, it was Shangela. And maybe this is my 120% for Shangela. But it felt like it was her giving energy, throwing her sparkles, like going all Frankie Grande on stage. But it just like there was nothing really unique or substantial about it for me.
Yeah. The problem is that we're down to five, Mike. And, you know, you really have to fight and claw to make sure that you're in the top two. Otherwise, you're going to be up for elimination.
Break out those kitty claws. I completely agree. I think she might have been my least favorite of this group just because totally co-sign what you guys said before. I don't think the persona was necessarily well-defined, or at least when you go right after someone like Ben de la Creme, who creates this great performance that's not even unique, but very opposite of her as well. Like, it just feels like here's Shangela in a sparkly outfit, throwing glitter around, and then just talking about, like, so gay, bitch, if you want to play. It didn't necessarily feel like, you know, I agree with Carson's comment. Maybe Emma disagreed because she hadn't seen Shangela before in this environment, but having seen Shangela do some really fun stuff over the course of this season, this was not necessarily her best, personally speaking. Okay, can we move on to BB? Because, oh my God. Oh, this was...
You go, Mike. You go.
All right, well, can I just read the lyrics out of BB's verse? Because they're beautiful. So we start, of course, with ra-ta-ta-ti-ti-ta-ta. Yeah, I'm pussy, bitch. Ooh-la-la-la-la-la-la. Same ball. Doko choco la ta la, you can take my snatch, drag it up, wheel it up, give me more, bring it to the ball. I mean, what does that even mean? That is, at least 40% of that, Liana, is indecipherable language.
Future historians will critique the writings of ancient drag culture, citing, yeah, I'm pussy, bitch. Like, what? That and the you can take my snatch? Say bon.
It sounds bon. Like, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like one of those, like you put a language through Google Translate and it puts it into, like, very broken English. Like, they took this language and it was like, you can take my snatch. Like, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't really mean English. All right, we'll just throw it into lyrics anyway. And then BB's like, it means whatever you want it to mean. Just completely writing it off. I mean, this was insane, Brent. These lyrics and the performance was insane.
Well, part of my issue with it was her in the beginning when she was like, well, I think I want to be like African Kitty. And I'm like, oh, what a fucking surprise. Here we go again. But, you know, and I know, like, I can hear some people going, well, you know, other queens did the same thing. Like, they gravitate to things that they're comfortable with. And that's certainly true. But here's the problem with, like, say, Trixie Mattel. You can say, well, you know, that's just Trixie. She's just doing a version of Trixie. See, I don't see that. I don't think that, like, a nymphomaniac mathlete is something that Trixie is in her normal drag life. I think that she can do that, but I don't think that's her natural persona. And likewise with Ben, when she's doing the goth queen, I mean, that's certainly not Ben. It's so far removed from what Ben is normally, and she really challenges herself. I'm so shocked. Again, I'm 100% positive that there's no, well, let me say this. Two things happen. One, I'm 100% positive that BB is a mole. Okay, let's just be clear about that. And two, I'm a little annoyed at Rue for putting her in the top. I thought that Rue could have done something where she said, you know, BB, Ben, and Trixie, you're the top three. And, you know, and then you're the top two and you're going to. So at least one of those top three was safe. She could have put BB in the safe position at number three. I know I'm splitting hairs here, but again, to say with straight face that BB was in the top two, I thought. And some of these queens, they were, you know, Shangela and Trixie, they were getting. Buts that I didn't think that they that were necessarily warranted. Like they were saying like, oh, well, we don't like your wig or we didn't care for this or, you know, it's just stupid stuff. Whereas, you know, BB had a concept that wasn't even understandable. And yet you're giving her a fucking pass. Sorry, I'm really irritated about this. I just like I didn't realize how much this was going to irritate me as this went on. That and somebody who is not up to the level, maybe Rue didn't anticipate that BB was going to be obviously not up to the level of the other queens when she decided. And I'm convinced that that's what's happening. I don't know, but I thought it was ridiculous that she was in the top two. And I don't know how anybody could look at me with a straight face and say that she was.
I mean, Brian, you need to take a Raka Tatiti timeout to just cool your jets just for a second. I completely agree. This between like, I would say the leopard print was like, very simple and didn't I like yes it was Jungle Kitty, but I feel like considering the complexity that some other people brought to their outfits, it didn't necessarily like feel that up to snuff for me. And considering that the lyrics made no sense and didn't mean to make sense whatsoever, I think Trixie tweeted that like she had written something that she felt was smart and cohesive, and the judges were like, okay, well, that was fine. And then BB comes out and goes rock-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a, and they're like, and Adam Lambert says, that's brilliant, that is hilarious, that is the second coming of Weird Al Yankovic. Here, take $10,000, it's or take $1,000 in gift cards. It's a little ridiculous, Liana.
Oh my god, it's so ridiculous. I really didn't understand why she was in the top. Like, Brent, I totally agree, she's gotta be a mole. She just has to be a mole. I'm sorry, this season does not make sense to me unless she's a mole. Because how does Trixie not make it in the top two? But yeah. Like, she does. It just, what? Oh my gosh, I don't know. Maybe there's some serious depth to the, I'm pussy bitch line that I just don't get. Like my little mind can't handle it, but didn't make sense to me.
Again, with the leopard prints and everything, I just thought that BB was out there being BB. Like, this is what she normally does when she does a high energy number, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just BB. She didn't push herself at all. She didn't attempt to write, you know, funny, interesting lyrics. It was just, I mean, you can say like, yeah, I was living for the fact that she was just giving us, you know, speaking in tongues. And I guess there's a place for that, but I just have to respectfully disagree with those people, Mike.
Oh, you know, the one thing that I will say is something I think that Michelle said during the critique, and it's, she said, there's a presence that comes with you. And I wonder if it's one of these things that translates into the room, but doesn't necessarily translate to our TV about the performance. Because I remember in the finale of season 9, wasn't it that Peppermint was performing for the crowd, but not for the cameras. Whereas
yeah. Trinity was performing to the cameras. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so they were perceived differently in the room versus how they were perceived at home. So that's the only thing that I can think of that might be a factor that she's not a mole. But
by the way, my partner watched that. I had him watch the finale of season 9, and I said, because he didn't know anything about it, and I said, just watch, because you're gonna live for these, you're gonna love these. And I said, who wins? He's like, Peppermint. I'm like, why? He's like, I was just living for her more. She was amazing, you know. Oh. So I'm like, well, you know. So I think that all those people who thought Trinity should have won, you know, my man was like totally not spoiled at all. And he was, you know, he lives for drag. And he was like, you know, Peppermint had to be Peppermint. Yeah.
Are you, are you sure he didn't say that because he's non-confrontational and didn't want to disagree with you?
definitely a possibility. Cause I also thought Peppermint killed that. Although I hated to see Trinity go, but we're getting off the tangent here.
But I completely agree with you, Liana. And I get a bit of it, I think, from watching her. I think she definitely has a presence about her that commands, no matter what she's wearing, she has this regalness that Thorgy sort of like pokes fun at earlier on in the episode with all the queen stuff. But for what it's worth, you know, with the moves and she was bringing, granted, she wasn't bringing much in terms of the lyrics or the outfit, but at least she was doing her damnedest with the moves at least. And maybe I shouldn't be shading this too much, because as I've been alluding to this entire podcast, I have been bowled over with this verse, and this will far and above be the one thing I remember from this challenge, if anything.
Good for you, Mike. Good for you.
I'm going like back here in my chair going like, track your life. Track up your life. Go. I'm not thinking about freaking BB.
So we get to the deliberation a bit as BB and Ben are deemed the top two. Again, a little bit of a debatable outcome among all of us. So they decide to hold court a bit. But this is, again, leading back to what we said at the beginning of the podcast. When I watched this back after the fact, and sort of watching this scene in particular, you really start to see this get foreshadowed with, I thought it was actually really well edited too, with Ben meeting with each of these queens and saying like, well, you know, Trixie needs more time to prove herself. She had a bounce back from 2 weeks ago, so I can't get rid of her. Shangela has been fantastic. I can't get rid of her. And Kennedy has this consistent temperament, so I can't get rid of her. You know, I think looking at it at the time, like, you know, I obviously expect that outcome to happen, but it was really interesting to sort of see it all fall into place, Liana.
This is like some Goldilocks and the Three Bears nonsense. She's like, it's too hot, too cold. I guess I'll just eliminate myself. Like a martyr falling on her sword. I don't know. I mean, you know, when it was all happening before I knew what was going to actually go down at the end, it was like, oh, no, this totally ties back into the beginning of the episode about, you know, what criteria are they going to use? And so, yeah, I was definitely, you know, sort of on the edge of my seat thinking about it. But now in retrospect, all those lines, especially when Dale at the end, when she's like, I know a decision needs to be made or something like that. I was like, she was eliminating herself.
Yeah. This was the part where I was like, man, damn it. She's going to eliminate herself because like you, Mike, I was like, well, she said that she can't eliminate anybody.
Yeah.
So what's she going to do? And then she's like, I know what needs to be done. I'm like, oh, frick. Like,
I eliminate RuPaul from the show. Nice.
So at that point, I'm thinking, okay, so I know that Dayla is going to go home. The bigger question is, who is going to come back? That's what I want to know. And I was blown away by that one.
I don't understand. What criteria was used for that decision?
I think it was, we'll talk about it, but I believe it was just, I felt I wronged Morgan, and I believe she had, you know, I deprived her of a chance to show more of herself on the show, whereas everyone else kind of had their due and to be able to show themselves off. So let me do that. But before we do that, let's get to the lip sync for a second, because both I'm talking to the Mole Squad here. Apparently, what did you think about the choice of Nobody's Supposed to Be Here by Deborah Wood? It feels like oddly coincidental. And again, I'm not getting too much into tinfoil hat theories, but we have BB in the top for a second week in a row. And for the second week in a row, we have an old school down tempo ballad.
She threw it though for the drama. I don't know. There's something bizarre is afoot, and I couldn't see past the brim of my tinfoil hat to like really get a good look at this lip sync. But there's something shady going on
here. There were definitely different points in time where they were showing us one queen and not the other, and I was a little bit annoyed by that. I hope that when it's eventually revealed that she's the mole, and we think that she is, that I hope that it's like the real mole where they go back in time and they show, you know, the producers or RuPaul talking to BB and going, okay, you have to throw this one. You have to throw this one because Dayla wants to go home. You know, I really hope that they give us that, because then I'll feel like it's successful, because this whole thing with the handmaids was just like, it fell totally flat. It was terrible.
Oh, Milk loved that noise he made, Brent, by the way.
I know, right? He got turned on. Like, they just totally fell flat. There was no punchline to what they were trying to give me. But they could land the triple axel if they show me what's been going on behind the scenes with BB Zahara Benet.
Yes, throw her in a Handmaid's Tale outfit and then tie everything together. Like, that would definitely bring it home for me. But the fact, like, you could show, you know, and I can see it right now in black and white with her removing her wig, because, and then Rue's face just like crestfallen, you know, because she threw that competition, that lip sync. I could see it all being put together. That would be great.
So I thought that this lip sync actually did have a bit of back and forth to it, because I will say I actually liked BB more in the first half than Ben, because I felt like Ben was sort of doing this kind of one note, arms outstretched, you know, Jennifer Holliday, you're gonna love me type of thing in the beginning, whereas BB was a little more understated. But then in the second half, BB starts doing these kind of like detox-esque weird lip trills when she's holding a note. And then, of course, we'll talk about taking off the wig, where Aja muses like, you ain't no Sasha Velour, bitch, keep that wig on, because there's nothing underneath it. And I think we saw this with Milan, I want to say, in season 4. We took her wig off and Rue sort of chastised her for it. But once that second half happened, I figured, okay, Ben's got to win this.
Yeah.
Especially
when you see the queens, like, they're showing the confessionals going, like, with Aja, like, well, you know, I loved it. She, Aja was like, well, BB took off her wig and she wasn't like Sasha Velour, honey. There were no flowers there. So, you know, she needs to sit back down. You know, keep that wig on.
What do we think it was? Do you think it was BB getting caught in the moment? I know I'm, again, asking the Mole Patrol, or do you think it was her actually saying, like, I think I know what Ben wants to do. Let me make her make that decision.
She's a mole.
I don't know. I don't know how much they're interacting with her behind the scenes. I hope they're interacting with her a lot if she is the mole. But if she's, I mean, if she is, and they're sort of letting her do her own thing, I don't know. Maybe she just decided to make a play and thought it was going to be really interesting. Like the thing you have to understand about Bibi Zahara is that she lives for herself. So she loves the fact that she has short hair and she rocks it like the queen that she is. But then she does it on the runway and it just doesn't land. The punchline, not that it's a joke, but the moment doesn't land right. And I think that maybe she misthought that a little bit. Like, she has many things, Mike.
I just zoned out thinking about, we need to get a Mole Patrol t-shirts, Brent.
Yeah, I know, right? Gosh. Yeah, I really hope they land us at the end, Mike.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. Was this the first time that we saw BB's hair, like, without it under a hood or a hat this season?
Yeah. I think so. I don't know. Is it? I'm thinking about her in confessional with that black hat and scarf over her. So I don't know.
All right. Well, we get the outcome, the whited out outcome, which, again, one of the things I loved about this moment is just like the white out of it all, how you, and we flashback, speaking of mole stuff, to like her painting the white out on over Kennedy's lipstick. Do either one of you have anything else to say about this moment that happened in Dayla's subsequent elimination?
I like that she did such a crappy job with the white out. I don't know. It just looked really bad, which I get it. Like, she did it herself, right? And it like has to be seen. But like, in retrospect now, looking back, like, at least I find humor in that. I'm pissed about the decision, but I found humor in the really crappy whiteout job.
I guess we should sort of tie in Morgan's return here as well. We talked about it a few minutes ago, but Brent, A, what do you make of Ben's reasoning to bring Morgan back? And B, do you think we might see a revolving door here where Morgan has a chance of going next week?
I think that Morgan was brought back because Ben, as she said in her exit interviews, wanted to give, she views All Stars sort of like how many of the queens view it, where it's less about the fact that there's $100,000 on the line, unless you're Alaska, and more about the fact that it's a chance to gain new fans on social media and show off all your drag and have a really great time. So I think that she thought that Morgan, didn't have an opportunity to show off her drag as much. I think that, I mean, like, I thought, like everybody else, that she was going to bring back Aja, because I thought Aja, you know, at least has participated in every episode of Drag Race. She's the one who's the most improved. She deserves it. But that's not how Ben thought of it. Ben thought of it like, you know what, Aja's already had her chance. She was in 5 or 6 episodes. She showed the world how much she's improved. So she doesn't need this anymore, because only one queen wins at the end. So I'm going to give it to Morgan. Now, as for your question, is it going to be a revolving door? I think 100%. Unless Morgan is in the top 2 next week, they're going to make all the drama they want, but she's going to be eliminated. Like I said, the one out that Rue has is if Rue decides to do a bottom 2 rather than a bottom 3, and, you know, basically makes somebody safe at the number 3 spot and then forces them to eliminate one of the bottom 2. That's the only way I can see her surviving, if she's not in the top 2. But yeah, if she's vulnerable for elimination, given how close these queens are and how much they think that she doesn't deserve it because she hasn't participated in the last 5 challenges, yeah, she's going to go home.
I completely agree. I think it's definitely going to be a revolving door type situation. But I think part of my like conspiracy theory when I saw that Dayla brought Morgan back and then subsequently eliminated herself was that she just didn't want to be in like the same group. Yeah. Like I assume that they sequester them differently. So Dayla's like, okay, if I'm going to leave, I got to put Morgan back because I do not want to see her face.
So we'll see. I mean, I guess Morgan brings a certain amount of drama to it, and I'll be excited to see, you know, what she brings to the challenge next week, which is we're going back to the acting well a bit, it seems. We're doing My Best Squirrel Friend's Drag Maid's Wedding Trip. So they're trying to do like a girlfriend's rom-com. So we'll see how that goes. We're going back to acting, not necessarily improvised acting. And there's obviously varying degrees of talent from all these queens, but I'm excited to see what happens. Do either one of you have any other thoughts you want to touch upon with this episode of Drag Race or Ben de la Creme or anything else under the sun?
No, I mean, she decided to give up a chance to win $100,000 and the crown and be in the Drag Race Hall of Fame. I had said initially that if there was anybody that was going to be wronged by this elimination style, it was going to be De La, because of the fact that she lives up there in Seattle. She's not involved with Drag Race as a whole. She's not involved with the show or the touring or anything like that anymore, as far as I know. And I think that she just didn't care. Maybe she didn't want the responsibilities of having all of that. But I don't know. I think it's a shame, but I'm glad I got to see more of De La. I can appreciate her drag. I'm definitely annoyed at her. And I would probably go see Kennedy over De La at this point.
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, that's what's hard in this moment, because I think I'm so frustrated with De La. I definitely don't want to forget all of the really fun things and the good things that she did do this season. Like, it was so much fun watching her up until this episode. So I'm trying to sort of separate those two things. But in this moment, I am mad at her.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at the bigger picture. And I totally agree that I am not the happiest with the decision that she made. But I also want to think about just like, even including this episode. I mean, she put in my opinion, 6 top worthy performances in every single episode, which is an absolutely incredible feat. No matter what they threw at her, she hit that ball out of the park before finally saying to herself, I'm just going to not go up to bat anymore. And it sucks because, again, she was so close to the end and she was doing so well. But I mean, as a De La fan going in, I was excited to see her come back and do really well from the first time she stepped out onto that that stage and did that burlesque routine. I was really excited to see, you know, what she was going to bring to the stage. And she really brought it every challenge, which, again, makes me almost that much angrier that she ends up making this decision and robs us, the viewers, of possibly seeing her kill it some more.
I think it's hilarious that she goes home technically in 6th place, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And yep. She was in the top 6, you know, like, you know, that math don't not add up, but it just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, she was in the top 5 and she goes home in 6th place.
Yeah, what?
Come on, Math. Even a nymphomaniac brainiac is getting confused by that.
Yeah. Come on, math lessons.
So we only have two episodes left of Drag of All Stars 3, which is crazy, because you would think that like this big climactic moment, you feel like you're just getting started, but we only have 2 more episodes after this. It'll be interesting to see how things shake out, but we will keep going as well as segueing into Drag Race Season 10. Again, we'll be doing, I think, 2 weeks from now, when we're talking about our All Stars 3 finale, we'll also do another podcast covering the Season 10 queens then as well, in preparation for the Season 10 premiere. In the meantime, you can follow all of us on social media and check out all the other stuff we're doing on RHAP. We'll go around the horn and plug that stuff. Liana, let's start with you.
Yeah, so Mike and I are back at it again, doing the RHAP B&B covering Survivor for the season. So that, you know, we recorded an episode today. It's going to be wonderful. So definitely check that out if you are into fun and games and Survivor. And you can follow me on social media. I am at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas.
So it's funny this season?
Oh, yes. Well, you wouldn't think so. We had Taryn as our first guest.
I was gonna say we had your master on the first episode, so now we know you have to watch, right?
From the House of Taryn.
Oh god, I have we're doing obviously Big Brother Canada is a big deal. We just did our draft last night with the aforementioned Taryn Armstrong and Melissa Denny, and we had a very fun time doing that draft. I think I have a very top heavy team, I'll just say that. If you go back and watch the podcast, Mike, you can find me on all social media platforms at One Lucky Gay. That's one spelled out. And hopefully we're going to do a Survivor draft now that there are 18 players left and Taryn isn't spoiled anymore, because obviously he was spoiled about the first episode because he's the producer of First One Out with Josh Wiggler. So now we can do it. And I'm hoping we're going to do it before we get to Wednesday night. Fingers crossed.
Is Taryn the Alexis Michelle of the LFC?
He's the one who gets the producer credit. Yes.
I can't believe you let me podcast what I was saying. These opinions.
That bad and haircut.
Yeah, exactly. though, Brent, you definitely would not let him go out in a bad haircut. You would definitely call him out on that shit.
Yes, definitely. I mean, like, come on. But it's hard for him to look bad. He's still, you know, it's like one of these things where even when you're in your early 20s, even when you're ugly, you still look pretty. That's kind of what Taryn is right now. Like, it's impossible for him to not to look cute.
You can follow me on Twitter at a Mike Bloom type. Liana mentioned the B&B before. I'm also doing Survivor exit interviews for Parade. I just finished doing Big Brother celebrity interviews, including talking with RuPaul's Drag Race judge Ross Matthews, who finished as the runner-up of this most recent edition of Celebrity Big Brother. I'm doing Top Chef podcasts. I'm doing SNL podcasts, a bunch of stuff. So check all that out. But that's going to do it for this week of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 3. Let us know your thoughts. Very, very polarizing episode. Big outcome to talk about. So we'd love to hear from you guys as to your thoughts about the outcome, the episode proper. We'd love to have these conversations about these types of things. So hit us up. We'll be back next week as we continue to march towards the end of season 3 of All Stars. But for now, sashay away. Bye!